The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA. All right, we're back here at Real Racing USA this week with Jay Carberry, who's a car owner in the he owns all kinds of cars. And Perry Brown, you guys went on an adventure to Kentucky and Tennessee and places like that?
Yeah, we sure did. We left out at the end of middle of last week and got back pretty late. No, we actually got back early, but we left late on Sunday night. So it was definitely a tiring trip, but definitely a lot different up there.
And where all did you go?
We went to Ponderosa Speedway in Junction City, Kentucky, Friday night, and to Tazewell Speedway. I believe it was in Tazewell, Tennessee, but not positive on the town on that, but I'm pretty sure it was Tazewell.
Yeah, Tazewell, Tennessee.
Yeah, Jay, what prompted you guys to pack up? I mean, you're down there in Florida to go racing dirt up in the bluegrass state.
Well, Perry had been running a little bit of the dirt stuff during the Winter Nationals a couple of years ago, and we met a couple of guys. Kind of got hooked up with Sean Flannery and Tim Eisen from up in Churchill, Tennessee. They come down to run the Nationals and kind of become friends and bouncing stuff off one another and just. After we put this new car together, kind of decided we'd go up to their territory and run and just, you know, take a little vacation and go have a little fun and have a new venture, I guess you'd say. But it was fun. It was interesting. It was a learning experience. Just kind of threw it together. Not last minute. We'd kind of been planning it just kind of on the cuff and just, you know, seeing how things went along and just decided to load up last week and head that way.
So you ran three races?
Two races.
Two?
Yeah, Ponderosa Speedway was a weekly show, just to kind of get our feet wet in the neighborhood. And then Tazewell Speedway, which was the Bob Series, which is that Battle of Bluegrass modified series. Of course, they run late models and everything else in that series, but it was the Tazewell Speedway was the host for the modified show that night in Tazewell, Tennessee.
So how'd it go?
It went, I was very pleased. I didn't expect us to go up there and, you know, etch our names in their fast record books or anything. It was more, like I said, more of a start out to be a fun trip, just to go experience something different, I guess you'd say, or, you know, etch something in your own history memory bank as, hey, I can, you know, Perry and I can both say we've been to Tazewell, Tennessee, and most people can't find it on the map. But,
right.
You know, a third-mile clay oval that's banked 28 degrees that you can't walk up.
Holy cow.
I think Scott Blomquist right now holds the track record for the late models up there at, like, 11 seconds.
So you guys were racing modifieds?
Yeah, we took our new Harris modified up there.
I gotcha. So, Perry, what was it like driving on a 28-degree banking?
It was definitely different. That was the biggest thrill of the whole trip because when you first get there and you're talking to some local guys and they say you've never been here before and you say no and they say, well, you better, when you pull out of the pit, at least go 40 miles an hour, you're going to slide to the bottom. That makes it a lot different than what I'm used to.
It's a little more than East Bay Raceway Park, huh?
Yeah, and it's not that I got a lot of laps out there, but I mean, we've got some bank tracks here. I mean, I would think New Smyrna's considered fairly decent banked, but, if you've ever been to Bristol, they
sure
know this for a fact, but the guy that owned the track there told us it was only 2 degrees different than Bristol Motor Speedway, so figure that out. That's pretty steep.
Yeah. Holy cow.
It was definitely different. Definitely real neat. Neat deal. You know, go back, got to go back a little different because they run a little different program up there with their motor situation and stuff and things. I mean, those are not that we didn't have horsepower, but they run more of a, seem like everybody up there runs bigger cubic inch motors. Kind of was a learning deal, I think, for me and Jay both. I mean, we didn't. I mean, the motor, you know, Jay can, I don't really know a lot about motors. I just know.
We kind of took a water pistol to a gun.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that sums it up right there.
Was that true at both tracks?
Not so much at Ponderosa, I don't think, because it's a little, it's closer to East Bay, but we're, both tracks were dry slick. Beginning of the shows, a lot of grip, and then as the shows progressed through all the heat races and everything, it kind of got dry slick. And you know, again, learning curve. You go someplace that you've never been, and
sure,
you know, it's like a golfer that, you know.
I was just going
to
say.
All of a sudden, he goes to Hawaii and plays golf, and he can't figure out why he can't find the green. Well, that's, you know, we were in the ballpark. We were just stuck on third base.
Yeah. So at Tazewell. Perry, what do you do under caution? You got to keep going your speed or you'll just slide off the track?
Well, it was dried up by the time that feature came, but I guess the best way for it would be like just throw yourself in a blender and turn it on or something. I mean, it's that bank. I mean, it was you had to keep switching gears around there. You couldn't keep it in one gear because you get going too slow and you really had to think about it. I mean, under caution, you get to relax here at home, but there I was more tense under caution than I was racing.
Yeah. That's funny.
But, no, it was it's something you can't explain. The pictures of the track on the internet, that does not do it justice until you actually walk up to the edge. I mean, just rolling in the gate, it was like, well, that's not that bad, or that's not what I thought. And then I walked up to the edge, and you know, if you're scared of heights and step up to the edge of the track, you're like, whoa, I don't want to get too close. If I trip, I'll break my neck falling down the track. So,
yeah, wow.
It's pretty wild.
So how was the tracks up there? Were they well attended and whatnot?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I use Inverness as a – I've been to Inverness three or four times, and I guess it's still the same way up there as it was last year, but that place has always impressed me because it seems like it's always standing room only there. Kind of remind you of the old St. Sunshine Speedway house, you know. And really, there's plenty to do up there, I'm sure, that I'm not aware of, but the towns are smaller, so it's the guy down the one of the guys there said, you know, it's real packed because it's not football season. So I guess there's really not a whole lot to do around those parks except race and do high school sports. So it was wall to wall at both tracks, packed house.
Now you guys have teamed up and doing a lot of racing together, right? I mean,
yeah, we got hooked up a couple of years ago. I was fortunate enough to had bought a car from Perry, and we got to carrying on, and I gave him asked him come test my pavement modified, which I've since sold. We're kind of retooling a few things, and you know, asked him to come test my car because I was not satisfied with the direction I was going. So, you know, we kind of hooked up from that point and ran the Gulf Coast Series last year and had was probably one of my best seasons in modified. So we won. At one point, there was only two winners in the show, or during the season. Lee Collins and Perry had won. We won both shows at Citrus, so that was a big feather in my cap to me, and you know, I owe him a lot, and he's a great driver. He does a wonderful job, and he's become a great friend. So I mean, it's worked out very well for me. I'm just ecstatic to have him part of my life.
That's cool.
And yeah.
Go ahead, Perry.
No, same thing. I mean, he pretty much summed it up. I've got I was actually excited when he bought the dirt car because I was, it's a long, long story behind all the deal. I don't really have very much dirt experience at all. I mean, I've probably raced 15 or 20 times on dirt, and I've just been fortunate to get a good car or something when the Nationals come around and make the shows. But I'm not going to get off base here, but I was happy when Jay got the dirt car, actually, because I really enjoy racing the dirt. And, you know, he also helps tremendously, too. I've got my own personal late model that Jay, you know, that is sponsored by Pallet King, and I'm sure you've seen it. I run the Sunbelt deal and stuff in Lakeland, and Jay goes and spots, and, you know, he's got cropped it into being a spotter after, you know, he spotted throughout the modified, and then he goes with us to all the late model races and helps us on that. And, you know, just worked out real good for all that stuff. So, but as he was saying, I don't know if he told you, the Sean Flannery and Tim Eisen, what huge help they were, because if you've been to East Bay and looked at the dirt modified and looked at the pavement modified, you know, we kind of had a somewhat of a handle on the pavement modified and didn't really get a whole lot of, kind of did all that ourselves.
They're a lot different.
Yeah. You look out under the back of the dirt modified, and you can get lost quick, or I can.
They look quite different. I'm not, you know, mechanically oriented at all. They just look completely like two different kinds of cars.
They're total different animals. I mean, they're so similar, but yet they're worlds apart.
Yeah,
and these guys, they came down, you know, Jay bought this brand new dirt car, and for the East Bay Nationals, and the first night we ran the B main, and the second night we won a heat race and was running second in the A main of the East Bay Winter Nationals, which I guess a lot of people tried just to make the A main with 130 cars there for years, and it was, you know, it was because it was good equipment, and those guys that came down, you know, they came here to our shop and set it all up. I mean, that's so huge in racing that a lot of people take credit, act like they're the big great driver, but it's to me, it's more set up than anything, you know. So if you get somebody good to set it up, but we're fortunate to have those guys to have come down and helped us because they've got a lot of experience with the dirt car stuff.
Yeah, I think I remember the first time you were on dirt. It may not have been your very first time, but it was. I remember you racing in the Sarah Modifieds when Rick Day got a wild hair and decided to take you guys dirt racing.
Yeah, maybe that's why I like the dirt, because I don't think if it wouldn't have been for the dirt, I wouldn't have won that championship.
I remember it was a very close race towards. You were the rookie of the year that year as well.
Right, I won the whole thing by 5 points. I had out Dwayne Dempsey.
Yeah, and Dwayne Dempsey, I remember when he went out to qualify, he had never been on dirt in his life, and he went out to qualify, and he spun in turn one on his first trip around the track.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie and say I wasn't kind of happy in the corner either. Not in a mean way, but I was thinking, well, that's going to help the point.
Yeah.
So I joked with him about it later, too. So, but, yep, that was my first experience with dirt, and I had fun out there then, and I didn't go out but just to watch for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. And then my uncle ended up buying a dirt car, and I got to go out in it, and I did real well in it. And he moved away and left it, and that's when I raced it. And I think that's just when I met Jay, and Jay came out. And I think he had a blast doing it, too, and he said, shoot, I'm going to get a dirt car. So, and I got rid of the one I had and really wasn't mine to begin with, but I sold it, and rest is what it is. Got one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just out having fun now. That's all we're doing.
Well, I was going to say, Jay, what was the any big differences from going racing in up in the mountains and the hills and down in Florida?
Oh yeah, there's a you know, I mean, racing is racing wherever you go, but I think the biggest thing that I saw a difference was just the demeanor of the people. Everybody takes racing seriously, and like several people told us up there, it's like Florida State. Well, when you go to Kentucky and race and then follow over to Tennessee, you know, and half of the field comes from Tennessee to Kentucky to race, and then when you go to Tennessee, the half of the field comes from Kentucky and goes to Tennessee to race, and we're a couple of Florida boys. And they're going, well, we welcome you all to come, but have fun, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just everybody was cordial. You know, it was great to have us come up there and race. And like I said, I didn't have – my expectations weren't that we were going to go up there and win. It was more of a let's go do this.
Let's go have fun, yeah.
And see how we stack up. We know what we can do at East Bay. Let's go up there in their sandbox and play. And a lot of people don't ever get that chance to do that. And I'm fortunate enough that I can – you know, if I want to take a week off and – go, I'm fortunate enough that I can go do that, and that to me means as much as winning.
Yeah,
it, you know, just to have be able to experience that something different. I mean, we've been Perry and I've been to every racetrack in the state of Florida, I think, except for the exception of two or three racetracks in the whole state. So, you know, it's not to say that we don't enjoy racing here. We do. We love racing here. We're competitive. He's very competitive. There's no quit in him, so that's what drew me to him. And the same effort when we go, you know, this trip up there, the same effort comes out in him up there. So it was meant to be a fun trip, a learning experience, and something to have locked in your memory bank and in your photo album. That hey, we went to Tazewell Speedway and we went to Ponderosa, and I mean, there's been some big name guys go there. It's like going to New Smyrna and winning. I mean, it's the history behind a couple of these places is just huge.
Oh, absolutely. And like in that bluegrass deal, I mean, they have the open wheel modified series, but of course they have the late model series too, and all the big names will race in that deal.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just, and again, it's like, you know, the first time I ever won a race at New Smyrna, it's like there, you know, you can't count your fingers of the names of the people that have one at that racetrack that everybody knows.
Perry,
say that, you know, it's just a neat feeling.
Perry, let me ask you this. You know, we've talked on our various broadcasts that we do lately, we've talked to a lot of, you know, pretty serious guys, you know, like Bug Stevens and Dick Anderson, and we did an interview with the other day with Butch Miller, the old ASA ace, and we asked these guys, we start picking their brain, trying to get inside their head. Now, you've won a lot of races, and like Jay was just alluding to, when you go to a race, people that know Perry Brown know that unless there's something really wrong with the car, you're going to be running up front. You're going to get the car to the front. What is the difference between a guy who goes out and runs mid-pack all the time and a guy who runs up front? Is it just money and equipment, or is there something inside that makes you have the extra drive that somebody else don't have?
That's a tough question, I think, but I'll try my best to answer that in the right way to answer it. But I mean, not knowing everybody's financial situation, a lot of times it could be a financial deal. When I jumped off in the super late model class, when I raced the modifieds, on a local track, I mean, I was a pretty good threat to win. When I raced Sarah, I was always in the top three, four, every show. I jumped off in the late model, and, you know, I didn't change as a driver, but I bit off way more than I knew was there. And it's really gotten a lot worse here in the last, I would say, 5 years. I mean, people with, not taking anything away from any of them. I've got a guy that, you know, my sponsor, Pallet King, and Dan Kwasnick and his family, who I'm also fortunate enough to be hooked up with. They're helping me tremendously in that class. But we've got Bob Schick at AMF Chassis helping us set the car up and stuff. And you know, right off the bat, you know, we were going at the beginning of this year from a middle of the pack car. We've been right there, you know, we've had some very, very bad luck, but we've had a very fast car at every Sunbelt show. I mean, at Lakeland, I was running third and started dead last, and had a whole line get cut and just silly things like that. But your guys that run up front are always going to run up front just because that's the way they are. You know, Jeff Schofield, Justin Draughty, and Jeff Choquette. And, I'm just using the asphalt guys that I run around. I think they're going to run up front no matter what they're in. It's in them to be up front. But I do also think there is some guys that run middle of the pack that have that same fire inside that could be there with them if they had the financial help.
Better equipment and technology.
Very super late models is very, it's very, very, very demanding right now. I mean, it's, I love it. I love racing, you know, a lot. But super late model racing takes a lot right now. I mean, Jay knows, and I can name people off, and but a lot of them have full-time crew chiefs, full-time. I mean, that's hard to beat people like that.
Yeah.
And but I'm not saying it can't be done, and but they're all good racers too. You know, they're gonna do good even if they didn't have a full-time crew chief. But it's a very super late models is very, very demanding. And it's very critical. That's one thing a little bit different about dirt than asphalt. And I could be way off base with this, but I think you can be a little bit off on your setup on dirt and totally change your driving style, you know, pretty dramatically and make up for the car. Where on asphalt, if you're out to lunch, on a big track, maybe on a short track it's different, but on a big track, it's really not a whole lot you can. There's some things you can do, but you're not going to make up a car that's off a half a second,
right?
And turn it into a winning car,
right? Would you agree with
you could?
Yeah, would you agree with all that, Jay?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of where I go back to the trip we went up there, and you know, having absolutely no points, never been there, we have to make the show on speed. And fortunate enough to have, you know, Boyd Horsepower, those guys, you know, Tim Eisen is just a book of knowledge. Every time he moves, something pops out of his head. That set the car up. We got up there, and he spent all day Thursday working on it, you know, setting it up to run those particular racetracks, two different setups, getting them ready. And we're fast enough out of the trailer to make the show. So, again, it goes back to, you know, good equipment. Perry's desire gives us, you know, that's to me, that's 70% of the battle right there, 75% of the battle. You got to have the desire, the talent to get there. Not everybody can drive. That's why I don't drive. That's why he's the driver, and I'm just the guy that right. over here and watches it.
Right.
You know, I go out and drive them. Don't get me wrong. I'll go drive it just to. I always want to know what it feels like and what it's doing and things like that. But the driver is the guy that has the drive, that gives you the information back. You know, you got to have good equipment, good engine builder. All of it, you know, it's a group effort. And that's what makes it fun when you can pull information from other people. So part of what we did up there was a big learning curve for both of us. I mean, I know I learned a ton of stuff being there. And I know Perry did too. So it's, you know, we ran on a totally different tire than we're used to running. First thing that threw us off right there. So, you know, everything, you throw all that in the bucket, stir it up, and throw it against the wall, what sticks, and if you're lucky enough to make it all work, then you're going to be up front.
Yeah, that's cool.
Plus, it was a brand new car, and, you know, you got the new car blues a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
always something. You got to get the bugs out of a new one, seems like, every time. So,
yeah. So what's coming up? Go ahead.
We had some bugs, but we had, you know, we made the shows, and that's what we went to do.
Yeah, and had fun doing it. Yeah. So what's coming up for you guys, individually or collectively?
Well, we're always collectively. If Jay's not laying in the hospital bed, but we'll be at, where we're going, Lakeland next, I guess, is our next trip.
Third leg of the Florida Triple Crown.
Yep. We're taking a... That's the car that, you know, that my sponsors, I told you, Pallet King and everybody, has helped me put together. And I mean, I'm not saying just they, everybody's helped, but I mean, we're going to go there and debut the Ford. We built a Ford, and we were almost at it there for the second race and just didn't make it, but Dennis Boyd built us a Ford to go to Lakeland with, and we're going for it. I mean, that's what we built it for. We built it for there in New Smyrna because I felt like we could use just a teeny bit more. Well, I guess nobody can use a teeny bit more. We can use all we can stand at those two tracks, I think, but we built it for there. Let's just put it that way, and that's the one we're shooting for. We're going after that one hard and heavy.
Do you refresh my memory? Were you at the second leg, the second race last month?
No, we had a real freak deal happen there. If you were at the first leg, you would have saw me about lap 160 get black flagged for smoking and oil coming out.
Yes.
I was running second or third at that time, and I pulled in, and there was oil all under the hood, and we thought that one of the oil lines that run underneath the harmonic balancer had rubbed into the balancer. What actually happened is the motor cracked a piston, and that's what made the oil line, according to engine builder, start flopping around underneath the balancer because it filled it full of combustion. And then we went to him and had him check the bottom end, thinking, you know, none of us thinking we had a cracked piston. We just thought we cut an oil line. That's where we thought the smoke was coming from. So
right. We
had him pull the pan, check the bearings, and everything looked great. And got the motor back, you know, a few days before the race and cranked it up, and it was smoking. We're like, okay, that's kind of weird. And he come over and right before the race and the night before, and he diagnosed as had a cracked piston or something. So
yeah, gotcha.
That was kind of a real letdown for my sponsors and stuff because, you know, that's they get a lot of exposure at Lakeland. And,
sure.
And I'd worked real hard and that whole week about, you know, getting there, and it was a real letdown because I like racing there. I knew we had a good car from the first race, and, you know, we just wanted to go back with the same setup and stuff. Kind of backfired on us, so.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing you can do about it, but
coming up on September the 1st, the third leg of the Florida Triple Crown, 200 laps at Lakeland, and I'll tell you, if we can get the kind of turnout we had for the last race there and the kind of fan turnout, it should be one hell of a good time.
Yeah, as long as all these nasty rumors will stop about not even going to have a race, but I've been hearing that stuff pop up here and there. I had to call Sunbelt myself and ask them if we're, you know, these a bunch of rumors or place closing it.
And you got told, it was a bunch of rumors.
Yeah, I did. I got told, hey, you better be here because we're having a race. So
got that right.
I didn't, you know, you hear all these rumors get started, and 9 times out of 10, they're rumors.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere next week. They're not going anywhere for a while.
Yep, we just need them there till after September 1st so we can at least race this new car.
There you go. And what about yourself, Jay?
We're going to do that, and I think we're going to try and plan a couple trips to the Carolinas maybe as the year progresses. And then we're going to hit some more dirt shows. We got another bullet being built here shortly so we don't go to another gunfight with a water pistol.
There you go.
Just for the dirt car. I mean, we've got plenty of good pavement motors, and the plan is to get another pavement modified ready towards the end of the year to go to the Snowball Derby with. And just, you know, one step at a time, keep the cog turning and just keep having fun.
There you go. All right. I really appreciate you guys spending some time with us on Real Racing USA, and sounds like you got a good thing going, a good tandem.
Yeah,
thanks for having
us. Yeah, cool. Good talking to you, Jack.
All right, man. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Good, Jack.
Okay, man. Thank you.
The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA.
know what? It's time to go drag racing! 200 plus miles per hour.
Welcome back to this edition of Real Racing USA, the All Harley Drag edition. Stevie LeTemp, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing absolutely great. We're up here in South Carolina, kind of sweating in the heat a little bit. It's, you know, it's 100 degree days, you know.
Yeah, you've been traveling all over the country and all over the country, literally, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But right now, I guess we have a guest with us, Armin Fur.
Absolutely, Armin Fur. Armin, how you doing, guy?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Just finishing up a day's of work.
But folks, just let me give you a little background here on Armin. Armin Fur last year was the champion in the Pro Fuel class. And, this year, currently number two in the points chase, but got a menace. He hasn't been able to race right now. We're going to try and find out tonight how he's going to handle this situation. He's got a bulldog that just simply won't get out of his way, it seems like. Armin, what you got to do to get past this guy and get back there on top?
It's going to be really hard to catch Jay. I mean, he's done so good this year. I mean, anybody that goes to the finals at every race of the event, you know, I mean, of course they're going to be on top. We fell behind at one race this year in Georgia, and that kind of put us, you know, in a hurting position. I'm going to have to gain a lot of points on Jay in order to stay on top. It's going to be really hard, even if it's going to be possible.
Well, you know, you have set the mile-per-hour record, 214, I believe, and notched up two wins and a runner-up, so you're having a great season. And what do you contribute the mile-per-hour record to? That was done, wasn't it, at Norwalk, am I correct?
Yeah, we did that in Norwalk. We had a chance to do some record runs in St. Louis this year. Saturday run real good. I did run a 658.3, which was knocking on the door, Jay's record of a 658.0. Just the air fell off on us a little bit on Sunday, so we just concentrated on trying to win the race instead of trying to set the record. But I figured we got Richmond and Rockingham coming up, and those, both of those are really great tracks, and the air's usually pretty good there. So I think we might going to try to do it again when we get to those places.
Well, we still have a few races ahead yet. Are you going to try and make the Western Swing? Are you going out to Salem, the Salem-Harley race?
No, I'm not going to be able to make that one. There's nobody really here at the shop. You got me and my brother Aaron, Bob, the guy that built the motorsports, and my dad. So most of us would have to be gone. You'd almost shut down my shop, so I'm just not going to be able to make it.
Well, that's a shame because I know these points are crucial. But the same situation, I think, you may find also with Jay Turner, you know, to make the distance, too. So that may balance out. But
I don't believe Jay's going to make it. I do know that Douglas Horn and John Breckeridge, they're going to go out there. And they're pretty close behind me. So if both of those do pretty good, they're liable to come out ahead of me after this weekend.
But you got to keep looking over that shoulder because they will be back there. There's definitely some strong competition in this class.
There's a handful of people that can win a race at any time. We just have to go out there and do our best every time.
Well, Armin, let me ask you, get away from the current racing. Tell me a little bit about your history and how you initially got started in it. I know you come from the town of Orangeburg, South Carolina. That's not exactly noted for a major bike town now. Just how did you get started in the motorcycles?
Well, my dad started doing it in 85, and I was around it all the time as a kid. And I was, you know, kind of in my teenage years, I was a little reckless, like to go fast myself. Kind of did it out on the street where I wasn't supposed to. And that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to do something to go fast, and that's kind of how I got started into it.
So back about 85, you got started in this thing. What did your dad, now your dad is one of the legends in racing as well. He's super competitor, super nice guy, does some of the most awesome burnouts I think I've ever seen. And how did he feel about you racing on the street?
Well, he probably really didn't know about all the racing I was doing on the street. I kind of get that to myself.
I think that was probably a wise decision.
How did you get from the street to the track?
I just, you know, I mean, he kind of knew that I used to hang around when I was, you know, kind of a teenager that I want to build me a bike, I want to go racing. And I reckon he kind of realized I was probably a little too much of a kid to really get in it. And I'm kind of glad that we waited until I was in my mid-20s because you really got to want to do this kind of stuff. I mean, it's not something that you go out there and And there's people out there that race, you know, NASCAR and NHRA and stuff like that, that go out and they make a lot of money and they have a lot of fun, and they don't necessarily have to do all the driving and all the work. And so what we do is you got to be kind of dedicated, and it's kind of hard when you're a teenager or in your early 20s to decide on whether you want to hang out at home and hit the parties and, you know, and do the stuff that everybody does on the weekend, or whether you want to go out to a racetrack at, when it's 100 degrees and sweat and work and get greasy and, you know, have to do all that and drive all the way back home, then turn around and go to work. So, I mean, you just really got to be dedicated, but that's what I like to do, what I want to do.
Well, tell me a little bit about your shop you guys have down there. You and your dad?
Yeah, it's pretty much a race shop, and I do have a little bit of the aftermarket Harley business. I work on, you know, some customers, local customers, street bikes, and then I also do work for other customers, drag bike wise. Well, I got a bike in here now that a guy just bought, and I'm doing some things on it for him, and I'm actually, we're going to go take him testing next weekend for his debut on a pro fuel bike.
Sounds like you're really devoted to it now. Apparently, you eat, sleep, and breathe it. You're building them in the shop, you're racing them on the track, and how does that do as far as, do you have any time to yourself that you want to do anything different? In some cases, I know guys are just totally locked in and devoted to bikes, and it sounds like you may be one of those guys. Is there anything else that you do other than race motorcycles?
No, not really. If I'm not racing, I'm usually here at the shop or I'm home. About my other only thing I like to do is because of the, you know, I'm going all the time and this, that, and the other. Me and some buddies of mine, I pretty much go get my little John boats and go to the river. The thing about that is we wind up racing them out there too.
Well, I will tell a lot of the people for the area down there around Orangeburg, there's some of the best fishing probably anywhere in the United States when you get down to the Orangeburg area. And in fact, Lake Santee is not that far away, and there's some incredible fishing. I was just curious. One reason I asked that, I just had to know if you had a bass boat out there or not, you know, if you did get out there and do a little bit of fishing.
I did have a pretty fast boat at one time, but I didn't really have anybody that would get in it with me because I was too dangerous. So I kind of got rid of it, and I stick with my little boat, and still even in a little boat, I usually wind up going out by myself.
Well, how does the future look for you for this season? Coming up, your next race probably is going to be what, Virginia?
Yeah, we're going to go to Richmond, and then back to back from that, we have the AMRA finals in Bowling Green. I'm going to try to go up there and finish that off with a number one plate this year. We're going to try to finish off HRA in the number one plate if we can catch Jay. I got a local match race here at the new drag strip in Orangeburg. I've been using it for a test facility here for the past couple of months. That's kind of helped out the Orangeburg Soccer Racing a little bit. I got a great, it's only an 8 mile, but a great 8 mile track right here, 15 miles from the house.
Well, you know, Orangeburg Drag Strip, that's probably one of the oldest drag strips in the United States. I believe it originally opened something like 1959 or something like that, and it's still going. And the man that took it over, I understand he put literally several million dollars into this track, upgrading it, and it's absolutely a gorgeous facility, so it's all concrete.
Provides
you to test that, huh?
Yeah, he didn't just buy bit of work on it. He bought this racetrack and he tore everything up out of the ground and completely redid it from just like it was a brand new piece of land. It's an awesome racetrack. It's one of the nicest and best 8 mile tracks on this side of the country.
Wow, so you got a great place to test. So coming up down the road then, I guess the next time that I'll get a chance to see you will probably be when you roll into Virginia then.
Yeah, I'm waiting to go to Richmond. Last year I said I was number one qualifier and run my best DT and best mile an hour ever, and just had some problems first round, and actually broke a hub off my rear wheel, and that kind of ruined my weekend, so I'm looking to get a little revenge at that racetrack this year.
Well, in other words, that actually turned your best times ever at Virginia.
Well, for that time of last year.
For last year.
Yeah.
And I will tell the fans that when you come to Rockingham in the fall, that usually the air is good there. That's a good, wide, safe track, tons of shutdown, and usually it's got a pretty good bite, am I right?
Oh, yeah, and Rockingham is a race that I've always wanted to win. Rockingham was is the place where my dad run the first 6 second pass in history. I also made my first six-second pass at Rockingham, and as many times I've been there, I've never won that race, and that's one race I definitely want to get under my belt sometime in the near future.
So Rockingham holds a pretty special place, especially, like I say, your dad, the first man to go into sixes on a Nitro Harley that happened there, and then you yourself at a later date managed to break that magic six-second barrier as well. That's quite an achievement there.
You know, Stevie, for fans that don't, you know, like myself, who don't, you know, don't know a lot about it and trying to catch up with what Harley drag racing is about, how does the air, Armin, how does the air, you talked a few times about the air, how does this come into play when you're trying to set up to get down the track?
Well, I can't give away all my secrets, but I was just in a different time of the year, the altitude, what kind of water's in the air. It's a couple of different factors, and you kind of just go by a certain ratio or some stuff in the air that you can tune by, how much fuel you can put in it and this, that, or whatever. And it's just the main factor basically is air, because all we're doing is running on top of a big pump. So the more air that we can put in it, the better off we can run.
Uh-huh.
That same comment, also the less water in it, because water doesn't burn. So the lower the humidity, naturally, is also a major plus for these bikes as well.
Right. Well, when you have a lot of humidity, it brings in a lot of water, so that takes up space inside your cylinder, basically. And you're correct, it doesn't burn. So you could only burn what you can compress inside the cylinder. Well, when you have good air and you don't have that much humidity, you can burn a whole lot more and put a lot more power to the ground.
Well, Armin, I'll tell you what, I've really enjoyed talking with you tonight, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule, because I know you put in some long, hard hours there, and I appreciate you just taking out a few minutes of your time to talk with Jack and I, and I want to thank you very much, and I really look forward to seeing you at Virginia to see just how fast you can get that machine to go.
All right, well, I hope I haven't ruined what I'm wanting to do, but I plan on going to Virginia and doing really good. That track kind of owes me some numbers, so I'm going to go try to put them down this year.
So I guess I can safely say, Jay Turner, look out. Here he comes, Armin Furr. Thanks, guy.
All right, thank you.
It's pretty wild, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just a great guy, and his dad, same way.
And that's 214, and his dad was
His dad was the first man to ever go sixes in a nitro bike.
Wow.
And I did that at Rockingham.
Yeah.
His father, Bill Furr, which we probably have on at another date, is an interesting individual. Truly part of the South Carolina, I guess, so to speak. Just a unique guy. You can sit down and talk with him all day long and tell you stories forever. And the unique part is, they're all true. They all happen.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back with, I think, Zach Johnson. Is that right?
Zach Johnson. He's currently the man number one in the points in Pro Street.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8888. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the Brakeman. The Brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the Brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and a new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman. On the web at thebrakeman.com.
Okay, we're back with Stevie Letemp and the All Harley Drag Racing Association. And every time we talk to these guys, Steve, it's you know, I learn something new every day. And, you know, because we have a lot of people that obviously will listen to these shows over the you know, either right now or weeks and months ahead. And we'll listen to the shows who don't necessarily know a whole bunch about it. And maybe we'll make a few new fans for this this kind of racing along the way.
Well, I think if you'll come to an all-Harley drag race one time, you'll be extremely impressed. First off, great people. Absolutely great people. I had never done a Harley race before until the beginning of this year. And it was my first indoctrination back, I guess, probably 3 or 4 months ago, something like that. Went out to Arizona, out to Phoenix. And I had a chance to meet these guys. And I thought, you know, I didn't know how I would be accepted. And I thought, because I'm coming from the world of four wheels, and they don't even acknowledge. If you have four wheels, that's what you pull the rig with. You know, you
sure.
Don't have a, there is no such thing as a race car. It is a race bike.
Right.
And so I had concern. I thought, you know, gee, I hope these guys will accept me. I don't know. And when I got out there, it was just so easy to adapt these guys. They were so open, and they love their bikes. And the neat thing is, if you come to watch one of these races, as a fan, you can walk right down into the pits and just go up and ask them a question. And if you want to learn about motorcycles and how they run and how the suspension works, these guys will talk your ear off. They're excited about what they do. They truly love their sport, and they're more than happy to talk with you about it. And who knows, they may have you convinced before you know it, you'll be out there in a street bike racing in street class.
Well, and you've got your feet wet this year in a very big way. I mean, you just came back from the biggest bike party on earth. Tell us about your adventure. What you can tell us.
Well, I was the announcer for Sturgis, and I've never seen anything like Sturgis in my entire life. If you have never had the opportunity and the time it arises to where you can go, if only once in your life, you need to go to Sturgis. Basically, the town of Sturgis is, I don't know, maybe 3,000, 3,500 people. It's not a big place. But Sturgis is no longer just Sturgis. You can take a 20-mile circle all the way around Sturgis, all the little towns in between. It's just wall-to-wall bikers. I was told that in a 10-day period, they estimated right at 700,000 motorcycles are going to go through Sturgis. So it's incredible. I've seen anything from $150,000 choppers to the guy out there in his Sportster that he, you know, on his, that he rides on to and from work. I mean, any and from all over the country, anybody. You're apt to meet, you know, Toby Keith, anybody. Singers, movie stars, and love bikes. All the big bike shops come out there with 18-wheelers, and they set up and they show all their latest. So if you're really into that, it's incredible. T-shirt mecca, oh my gosh, I never saw so many T-shirts in my life. And basically, when you pull up to a stoplight, there's four Harleys across, and about 3 foot space in between them behind, that's the next four, the next four, the next four, the next four, the next four. It, the entire town stays like that all day, all night. And from the drag strip up in the tower, we're up kind of high, and I can look off, and you can see a lot of these little roads because veering off going here and there. But you got to remember, out in South Dakota, not a lot of trees when you get out of the valley. It's all green, rolling hills. It's absolutely beautiful country. I see why they want to go out on rides. It's beautiful.
Now, who's the guy, who's the gentleman that owns the track, the drag track out there?
Well, actually, it's owned by, it's leased by the All-Harley Drag Racing Association.
Uh-huh.
So, we actually have a lease on it now, and we're in the process of fixing it up. In the old days, you know, it used to be hay bales and a shark shut down, and it was pretty exciting, I guess you might say.
Right.
But now it's an NHRA-sanctioned track. It runs double concrete guard walls, entire length on both sides.
Now, they had made a bunch of improvements for this year.
Length, the shutdown, I mean, just huge changes on the facility.
Yeah.
And, in fact, we had one individual. And they call him the Grizz, and one of my heroes. And this man, he's out from Pueblo, Colorado. He owns the Chop Shop. And, he came out there in his bike. Now, you know, we talked earlier about corrected air.
Right.
And how much water the air and so on. Well, up there, you're at so much altitude. You're sitting probably at 5,000 feet, something like that. And the corrected air for the one particular day that we were in the finals, it was about 6,700 feet. which is terrible air. You want to race down where it's like 1,000 foot, you know, 1,200 foot or below. That's when you get those fantastic numbers. When you start going up, your bike, our car, either way, both are going to slow down. It's just, that's just the way it is. You don't have air, you know,
yeah.
You can't do anything with it. You got to have
sure.
And it's just like a human climbing a mountain. It's, the higher up you get, the weaker you become because you're trying to draw more air in. Well, even with the poor air that we had, this guy launched the bike and went 421 in the eighth mile at 100, I believe, 168 mile an hour. And I don't think the front wheel ever set down. I truly believe probably that was the rear wheel giving you that 421 ET.
Yeah.
And it just, to put that in perspective, in the quarter mile, that is real, real close to probably 620. And 200, and that would probably be a 225 mile an hour run or a car close to it.
Yeah. And a lot more about this this traveling or this series can be found on the All Harley Drag Racing Association website, ahdra.com. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, the All Harley Drag Racing Association, you just jump on there. If you can't find it, just punch it in your computer and it'll guide you to it.
There you go.
And learn more about it and where the races will be and stuff.
All right, let's take a very short break here. We'll come right back with Zach Johnson.
PowerMaster is your ASA series sponsor for the XS Power batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power series of batteries, XX Power batteries for racing applications, and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
Okay, we're back here with the All Harley Drag Racing Association, and we have Stevie LaTemp. Stevie, we have a new guest on the line with us.
Oh, yeah, we have Zach Johnson. Zach, how you doing, guy?
Pretty good, Steve. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine, but I think you're doing a lot better than me because you are flat getting it on this year in McKay's Pro Street. Currently, Zach Johnson, for all of you out there that aren't familiar with him, he is currently number one in the points. He's already seen three major wins and a runner-up this season. And I got quite a year going there, guy. Tell me about it.
Well, at the beginning of the year, we were struggling pretty hard trying to get the bike straightened out, and seems like all the hard work's paid off. We've went back to the front so far, but in that class it's hard to tell. The competition's pretty tight.
Well, I do know that there's a guy by the name of Danny Worth that is just flat breathing right up your pipe right now.
Yes, sir.
He's just waiting for you to slip. Is that going to happen?
Well, you can always hope not, but you never know. Danny's consistent, and Danny, you know, they're a hard-working team also, so, you know, hope the best for him, and hopefully we can do just enough to stay up front.
Well, let me ask you, where's your next race going to be with us?
Next race will be in Portland, Oregon.
You are going to Oregon?
Yep.
That's a long haul. And that'll give you an idea, too, the dedication that so many of these racers have. How far is Oregon basically from your home?
I think it's about 48 hours, maybe 50 hours.
50 hours on the road. Holy smokes.
That's the Northwest Nationals? Is that what we're talking about?
Yep.
That's going to be the Salem, Harley-Davidson, you know, Northwest Nationals.
Yeah.
So, have you raced at that track before?
Yeah, I've raced there 3 years in a row now.
How is the track up there compared to what we have here on the East Coast? That's a new track to me now. I've never had the opportunity to be there.
It's a decent racetrack. We always seem to be a tenth or two faster out there.
Really?
Yep. It's hooking up's always an issue because you're making so much more power. It's kind of hard to get the bike settled down. But it's always been a good track.
Well, Woodburn, Oregon, that's almost on the coast. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
So you should be able to get that good, fresh, clean ocean air coming in there to make that horsepower.
Yep.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you do. Get away from the racing part of it, which I know is a major part of your life, but just how do you make the money then to keep the bike going down the road, I guess I want to say?
Well, a lot of help with our sponsors this year really helped us out. You know, Rush Exhaust, Mack Tools, Barnett Tool and Engineering, a bunch of other guys really helped us out this year. And then here at the shop, I'm a mechanic / manager / whatever needs to be done this week. You know, we build motorcycles, service bikes, pretty much anything your Harley shop will do, plus, you know, on top of that, the performance work and the bike building.
They do a lot of custom work as well?
We used to. The custom industry seems like it slowed down just a little bit for us anyway. Some of the guys I've talked to said they seem to be the same way, but the motor building right now, a lot of the motor building really picked up and carrying the shop right now.
Well, what is new out there as far as engine designs and ways of generating more power out there? Is there anything new out in the market? I know I heard something about the 60-degree block that the Nitro guys are using. Do you have anything like that you can use as well to increase performance on your bike?
Yes, S&S just came out with a new X-Wedge motor. It's going to be, I think it's a 117-cubic-inch motor up to 139-cubic-inch motor. It's a new 3-cam motor. I've not really had a chance to get my hands on it yet, but the way the port design is and the way the valve train is, it's, you know, supposedly, you know, you should be able to make 2.5 horsepower per cubic inch pretty easy with this motor, you know, with the right work done on it.
Well, that's some serious power. And will that be legal to run that block in the pro street category?
Technically, I guess it is a push rod motor, but I don't know. I don't know. We've not really went that far into it yet.
That's going to be up to Uncle Bill, huh?
Yes, sir.
When I talk about Uncle Bill, if we get a little bit, that's the man who is the head of tech department for the All Harley Drag Race Association. And sometimes Uncle Bill's a nice guy. Sometimes he lays the law down. So.
Depending on what kind of mood he's in that day.
That's right. You got to keep him happy.
That's it.
And what do? Do you have to go through tech before? Like several times, like you have to do tech before and after runs, or how does that work?
Well, what we do is we go through tech as soon as we get there. Say on Friday, we go through tech, take the bike in, our leathers, all of our equipment, and then, you know, at the end of the race, you win a race. It's up to them whether they want to send you back through tech after you win the race. 9 times out of 10, they won't. But I have had them tear me down once or twice.
How about scales? Do you have to be weighed?
Yeah, we weigh after every qualifying round and every race round, and I think we have to be 5.5 pounds per cubic inch.
So, some serious horsepower, all these things. At 5.5 horsepower per cubic inch, how light is your bike?
5.5 pounds per cubic inch, I think we're right at 753, 137-inch motor making 250 horsepower.
That's the yellow bike?
Yes, sir. It's actually red now, but it is the same motorcycle.
I got you. Now, how do you take a bike like this? Somebody, do you go buy a bike already built like this, or do you guys, companies like you have, or other people, you go to them and you say, okay, build me one of these?
Yeah, if somebody came to me wanting to build a Street Pro chassis or, you know, build a Street Pro bike, you know, we get our chassis. The chassis we're running right now is actually a Cosman chassis. You know, that we put together, they made everything suitable to go down the racetrack.
Yeah.
I don't know that, I think G-Squared's doing a deal to where you can actually buy a bike, you know, a final, you know, a bike already finished.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's hard to find one, you know, right off the showroom floor that you can go race, not in this class anyway.
Yeah, so like, say, entry-level type classes or, you know, somebody's just getting involved in this, what kind of money are we talking about to put a bike out there that's going to be competitive in one of the entry level classes?
Well, like that, the Street Pro class I'm running now is, you know, really all I know, you're probably looking at spending anywhere from $60,000 to $120,000 to be competitive.
And like you have to remember now, that the class, you know, that Zach runs, that might be an entry-level class into the professionals, because that's a pro class.
Right.
It's actually a, it is a pro class.
But we have a class called Thin 3 ET, where basically your street bike. I mean, just it's
yeah,
like
we'd
rock.
Yeah, we'd interviewed some guys who did that. Yeah, but this bike here, what we're talking about, is somewhere $60,000 to $120,000.
Yeah, to be up to take you close, you know, to be up front or close to up front.
Yeah.
Now, like I say, this pro street class, even though the name street is attached to it, the first three letters tells the story. P-R-O. It is a pro class. There's some serious money in it, and the drivers are extremely talented. And they're all veterans and quite capable. Any one of them quite capable of winning a race. That's another thing, too, that whenever the fans come on out to see these races, not only can you go up and talk with Zach, and Zach's more than happy to tell you all about it, but you'll find that these guys are very competitive. And you'll have a multitude, sometimes, of former world champions, sometimes just line up. Because this is something, if you get that plate with a number one on it, it's really, really tough to keep. I think Zach will verify that.
It is. It's a hard plate to keep. We, you know, you're running a 70-inch wheelbase bike, you know, with a street tire, no wheelie bars, making that kind of horsepower. It takes a real talent to keep the bike, you know, going straight down the racetrack.
Curiosity, Zach, you said no wheelie bar. Now, how do you keep the front wheel down on that launch? Because I know you crank those babies up when you turn them loose.
It's all in rider. I mean, it's really, the bike's going to do what the rider, you know, what the rider does. You let the clutch out too fast, the bike's either going to spin or wheelie. It's, you know, it's just a fine line there. There's really no way to put that kind of power to the track doing what we're doing, so we're just trying to make all we can make to run out the back door.
So you have kind of a feel when you start to let the clutch out? Is it just how to let it come out to where it keep control to keep it from standing up?
Exactly. It's all in feel.
Zach, have you raced other stuff, like other types of bike racing or other types of racing, or is this just...
I started out on a Harley, similar to this, what we're running now. It was, you know, 4 years ago, these things were closer to street bikes than they are, you know, than they were race bikes. But, you know, it's pretty much the same principle, but now I've never done any other racing short of, I've done some street racing, but other than that, never really done
drag
racing other than with HDRA.
I think everybody that races, whether it's bikes or whatever, has always done some street racing.
That's usually what makes the money to fund it all to begin with.
You know, in many cases in the old days, we didn't have drag strips like what we have now either.
Exactly.
That's right.
In other words, if you raced on the street because there was nowhere else to go. And one of the things that is pretty nice now, that thanks to the All-Holly Drag Racing Association and people like NHRA and IHRA, they have tracks extremely safe, and they're an excellent place to go and for a good night of entertainment and to have some fun and do the racing, and pretty safe as well on the street, I have to tell you.
And they reach out, and the tracks have been doing reaching out to the community to try to get especially kids and younger folks coming to the track instead of on the street, too, and that's a good thing.
Exactly. You're in a controlled environment. It's a whole lot safer doing what we're doing at the racetrack than it is out on the street. There are too many cars out on the road.
Well, I'll tell you, Zach, I really appreciate you coming on tonight, and I know you had a busy schedule, and I hate to take you away from it. Maybe just a little break away from turning the wrenches a little bit. Probably good now and then, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Well, I do appreciate you coming on this evening. I thank you very much. And, by golly, I wish you all the best when you get out there to the Salem Harley-Davidson Northwestern Nationals.
Guys, I sure do appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, sure. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks a lot, guy. We'll talk to you later.
Take it easy.
All right, bye-bye.
Pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. He is a great guy. In fact, you know, they all are. Armin Fur, Zach Johnson, both of these guys, just super individuals.
So let me ask you a question here. We get our dumb question of the week. What is the difference between, okay, so now Zach Johnson, that we just talked to, drives a street pro. What's the difference between that and, say, a pro modified?
Well, there's motors, there's motor modifications and weight differences on them. I wish I almost got to get a rule book out to break it all down.
I got you.
There's a huge amount of power difference. They're fast. But they're all fast. Once you say pro, whether it be pro fuel, pro gas, pro drag, pro stock, pro modified, or pro street, all these guys flat fly. But there's different engine modifications. A lot like there are on cars. When you see pro stock,
sure,
IHRA or NHRA, they're set up one way. And then when you see pro modified, they're totally different as far as the power outputs and so on, run different ETs. Well, the same thing carries over when you get into the motorcycles.
Yeah. And so no matter what you're running, you're having fun when you're in an AHRA.
Oh, it is an absolute great time. And I tell you, I've talked before about, you know, adapting and getting to know the guys and everything. And they've just allowed me to come into their family. And that's what it is. It's just a big family. Everybody wants to race. Everybody wants to have a good time, and I'll tell you how great these guys are. I've seen one guy have a starter problem, and I've seen the other guy go over there and let him borrow his starter to fire his bike.
There you go.
And they're going to compete against each other.
So what's coming up on your agenda here?
Well, unfortunately, I do not get to go to Woodburn, Oregon. I'm going to miss that race.
Yeah.
And I will be headed to the next race that I will go to. Will be at Richmond, Virginia, when I go up there for the All-Harley Drag Racing Association. And in the meantime, I'm getting ready to go to Canada here in a couple weeks, where I have a IHRA drag race to do up in Canada. So I'm back on the road again. I'm going to get this weekend off. It's a pretty rare thing for me.
So will you be doing the September All-Harley drag deal in North Carolina?
No, I will be in Canada.
Oh, that's the week you're... Okay, yeah.
Unfortunately. But I will be at Rockingham when the Harleys come to town.
Right.
And I tell you what, if you're in the Carolinas and you want to come to a race, no matter where you are, you want to come to an all-Harley drag race, probably Rockingham will be the killer track, because that is where the air will be awesome. Nice, super facility.
Now, that's on October 13th and 14th at Rockingham, Screaming Eagle Performance Parts Nationals. What you're doing an IHRA drag racing event at Rockingham later in the year, too.
Yep. In fact, I want to say the next weekend.
Is that right?
In the month of October, I have 3 races at Rockingham.
Yeah.
So from an IHRA race to an all-Harley drag race back to the an IHRA race, which will be the bracket world finals. And so we have 2 world finals in IHRA, one race with the All-Harley Drag Racing Association. So Rockingham is a happening place.
Yeah, you know, we were there. We went up there for the IHRA drag racing event earlier this year and had a great time. It was a great facility, and we're going to go back. The 13th and 14th, now how many teams do you think will, for an event like that, and especially towards the end of the year, what kind of, how many teams show up? How big of an event is it?
I'm going to say we're probably going to have about 350 teams.
Wow.
For the Harleys come in there. And, of course, you never know until the race goes down, but I'm pretty sure I'm right in the 350 zone, give or take, you know, 20 or 30 either way.
Got to be a big party on Friday the 13th. Or is that a Saturday? Is that a Saturday-Sunday event or Friday-Saturday?
It'll be a Saturday-Sunday event.
I got you.
We're there Friday, and there will be a party Friday night, I assure you. We have Test and Tune on Fridays.
Uh-huh.
And then afterwards, Test and Tune is over with about 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then one of the darndest parties you've ever seen will break out.
All right. All right. So, and next week we will have, we'll meet a couple of more of the stars and the top riders of Harley-Davidson's in this country, huh?
Well, we're going to probably just see what happens out here at the Northwest Nationals and see who shines.
Yeah.
And, by golly, see if I can't get them on the air so they can take you all Harley drag racing.
All right, Stevie. Till next week. Yeah.
one more.